The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department of Dominican University of California. Welcome to the Beyond the Bite podcast. I'm your host, DJ Sample, and on this podcast, we take a dish and talk beyond the taste and discuss the culture and significance behind the dish. Join me as we travel across various cultures through flavor. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first episode in the Beyond the Bite podcast series. I'm your host, DJ Sample. And as the intro stated, each week I'm going to be picking a dish from a certain country and talking about its cultural significance within the country and its global outreach. Now, for this week, I've picked something that I hold very dear to my heart, and that is Japanese food, but more specifically, onigiri. Now you might be asking yourself, what is onigiri? Well, to put it simply, onigiri is a rice ball, and you'll almost always find it as a triangular shape, but sometimes they can be round. And within this rice ball, there's always going to be a filling, whether that be something like salted salmon, or tuna with mayo, or even umeboshi, which is pickled plum, which is very sour, by the way. But not only that, you can really just fill the onigiri with whatever you want. As long as it's something that you like, you can really have just about anything inside of your onigiri. Along with a rice ball and the filling of your choice, onigiri also has nori on the outside, which is seaweed. Because onigiri consists of only three ingredients, which is rice, a filling of your choice, and nori, it can be super portable, affordable, and you can find it anywhere. My favorite is going to Japan, and in instances like in 2 a.m. and you're really hungry, you could just head down from your hotel to your local Lawson's or 7-Eleven, or if not, you can make them at home, albeit they'd be slightly uneven, but still as tasty. Now, onigiri is an everyday food. It's not something that screams for attention, but it's always something that's there. It's nice, it's warm, and it's portable. That's what makes onigiri really nice. Now at large, onigiri is really simple, like I've said before. It's just rice, salt, nori, and maybe just something tucked inside. And that simplicity matters. Because in Japan, rice isn't just an ingredient. It's the foundation. In Japan's rich history, for centuries, rice meant survival. Entire villages were organized around planting and harvesting rice. The seasons weren't just about the weather. They were about whether the crops would come in or not. If the rice failed, then everything might have just failed. So rice just became more than something you ate. It became security, stability, and most definitely power. In feudal Japan, a lord's wealth wasn't counted in money. It was really just measured in how much rice his land produced. I mean, think about that. Their power, it was measured in grain, which is crazy compared to what power is defined as now. And when something just feeds a country for just generations and generations and generations, it starts to mean more than just calories. Rice shows up in Shinto rituals. It's even offered at shrines. It's a present at weddings and at New Year celebrations as well. The moment that marks the beginnings and honors the past. Even the language reflects it. The word gohan means cooked rice, but it also simply means meal. To eat is, in a way, to eat rice. That's the kind of relationship that shapes identities. Rice carved terraces into the mountainsides. Just imagine, it shaped irrigation systems. It shaped labor. It even shaped a community. It shaped the land and the people living on it. And really what's just interesting that I find is how humble it is. It can be any color, any grain. It's neutral. The taste is nothing that screams in your face or just literally anything. And it's quiet. like I said before, it just doesn't compete for attention. It supports whatever surrounds it. And in a culture or country that often values harmony and balance, rice is the exact food mirror that has the same restraint. It anchors the meal without overpowering it. So, when you hold an onigiri, you're not just holding a snack. You're holding centuries of work of flooded fields under summer sun. Just imagine that picture, right? And of families depending on harvests. You're literally holding something that has quietly shaped a nation. And somehow, all of that history fits into the palm of your hand. That's why rice isn't just food here. It's an identity for the ages. For a lot of people, onigiri isn't just about history. It's about home. Now, imagine this with me. It's the taste of something that's packed before sunrise. The quiet sounds of rice being scooped from a pot that's still warm, hands that are slightly salted so the grains don't stick, and so the rice keeps a little longer. There's something that's deeply personal about the way onigiri is made, in my opinion. You just don't use a mold, you shape it with your hands, not squeezing too hard, but not letting it fall apart. There's almost like a balance to it. It's firm, but it's also gentle. And that balance matters, because someone like me, or you, is going to eat it later. In Japan, it's common for parents, especially mothers, to wake up early to prepare lunches. Bento boxes carefully arranged, and often tucked inside, you'd find an onigiri. Maybe there's salted salmon, or mayo tuna, or maybe even umeboshi. But sometimes, if you're really unlucky, there's nothing at all. It's just rice and salt. Now, small story time. When I was in high school, maybe a sophomore, it was lunchtime, and I was really craving an onigiri, and I hadn't brought one from home. But luckily, there's a place by my school that sold onigiri, and it was really popular, so the lines were always really long. And so I line up at the beginning of lunch. I try and run over there, but the line's still super long, and there's a bunch of people already there. And by the time I get to the end of the line, there's the little tray area that sold onigiri that you pick up before you go pay. And I'd picked a katsu onigiri, which is honestly my favorite that they sold there. And I picked the smaller one, and I didn't realize it until then, but I'd paid for the food, and I was walking back on a campus, and I decided to eat it on the way back. Lo and behold, when I bit into it, there was literally nothing. It was empty. Although I was slightly bummed out and definitely cheated on for my money, it still felt strangely complete, you know? There's something powerful about food that doesn't just try to impress you. Onigiri just isn't flashy, and it doesn't demand attention. It's steady, it's reliable, and most definitely quiet. You can fit into a backpack, into coat pockets, and maybe even pant pockets if you're trying really hard enough, but I wouldn't try that. And when you unwrap it, whether it's in a plastic wrap like you'd buy in a store or in your lunchbox, there's a small moment of pause, a breath between tasks, between stations, between responsibilities. For many people, that first bite tastes like childhood. like field trips, school lunches, like coming home tired and finding something warm waiting. It's not a complicated food. It doesn't need to be. I mean, care doesn't have to be complicated either. It's just something that's rice, that's pressed gently into a shape, something that's just made to sustain you throughout the day. And that's what makes onigiri so enduring. It carries the weight of identity, but it also carries something softer. Memory? Effort? Presence? I mean, someone shaped this. And that small act, repeated just millions and millions of times across generations, became its own kind of tradition. In the end, onigiri isn't just about rice. It's about the quiet ways that people take care of each other. But now that I'm thinking about it, that story, it doesn't stay quiet in kitchens forever, you know? I mean, let's just get the facts straight. Today, millions of onigiri are sold throughout convenience stores, like 7-Eleven, Lawson's, Family Mart, you name it, you know? But they're always so perfectly wrapped, engineered to the finest quality. They're clean and efficient. I mean, it's still rice, it's still salted, and, you know, it's still filled with whatever you want. And it's still nourishing. But something shifts. Those hands are gone. No one woke up early for this one. You know, no one pressed it gently, adjusting the pressure so it wouldn't crumble. And it came off a line, sealed in plastic, timed to the exact minute instead of with your hands. And I guess, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it's not really that bad of a thing, you know? I mean, looking at Japan, it essentially just runs on efficiency. You know, the convenience store onigiri makes sense that it would. It fits the rhythm of late night trains and fluorescent lights and the quick breaks between meetings for those underpaid and overworked salarymen. That's a whole nother story. But in some ways, it's genuinely impressive. Even industrial food carries a kind of care. The attention to texture, to packaging and detail. But there's a quiet question underneath it all, you know? What something shaped by hand becomes something optimized for scale? Does it lose its meaning or does it simply adapt, you know? Onigiri has always adapted. Think about it. Farmers carried it into rice fields centuries ago. Travelers packed it for long roads. And those soldiers that fought in war took it into battle. And now, office workers unwrap it on crowded trains. Students grab it in between classes, like me. Night shift workers eat it alone under bright convenience store lights, which is, you know, kind of sad, but the world we live in now. You know, maybe identity isn't about freezing something in time, but maybe it's about what survival change. Because whether it's made in a quiet kitchen or purchased at dawn under those horrible, horrible fluorescent lights, at its core, it's still the same. Rice, salt, seaweed, you know, filling of choice, and sustenance. Something steady in a country that moves very, very fast, you know? Picture this with me, you know? Somewhere tonight, someone, just someone, is, you know, unwrapping an onigiri on a late train ride home. They take a bite. They think to themselves, the rice is soft. The seaweed crackles. And the filling is simple. Familiar. For a moment, between those stations, those overbearing obligations, it's just rice in the palm of their hand. Here's some food for thought. Somehow, it may just be enough.